When I think about like me as a black woman, hearing about someone that had cancer before I had cancer, it was, oh my God, so-and-so's not well, they're going to have chemo. I suppose within our community, cancer just means death.
Yeah. Welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast, providing support and information to anyone affected by breast cancer. This podcast contains the personal stories, opinions, and experiences of its speakers, rather than those of Breast Cancer Now. Today, we're talking about cancer in Black communities with Mara, who was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer in her late 30s. With a background in mental health care, Mara is now dedicated to raising awareness of breast cancer and removing stigma within the Black and Christian communities. We'll be talking about the BRCA2 gene mutation, triple negative breast cancer, and finding positives even when you're dealing with the worst possible diagnosis. Mara, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So this is the Breast Cancer Now podcast, and we're going to start with a few warm-up questions. If money was no object and you could go anywhere in the world on holiday or even to live, where would you go right now?
Right now? At the moment, I've got this thing about Japan. And I've always wanted to go, but then Googling a few weeks ago, I realised that they had beaches. So now I really want to go because I've got beaches. So just think for the tech, for the beaches. And I think everything that I'd like could be just in one place. I just want to go and have a look.
I've literally just got back from Japan really, 2 days ago, so we can have a chat later about that.
Oh my God.
If there's one thing from your life goals list that you could do now, what would it be and why?
I actually don't know how to answer that question because I think my life goals are constantly changing. So I think my immediate life goal is just to be able to travel more freely when I want to and having the disposable income to do that. So that would be the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what brings you joy right now?
Trying to learn about myself. It's a bit painful, but it's bringing me joy. Yeah.
Is there any learning that you've had about yourself recently that has made you particularly joyful?
I'm learning that my mind's a bit more resilient than what I thought. Yeah. So then that makes me emotional because I think I've not really had time to sit down and digest about like my personality and things like that because I did everything so early. So yeah, it's like I'm finding like a sense of self now. Yeah.
I love that. That's really wonderful. Let's get to know a little bit about your background. So you've worked in the NHS, working in mental health care. Can you tell us a bit about your work and what life was like in the lead up to being diagnosed with breast cancer?
Leading up to my diagnosis, it was just quite a traumatic period because I'd lost my dad in 2022 to cancer. Right. And I'd then lost my grandma a couple of months after that. And then there were, you know, like family elders, people that I grew up around. And altogether, I think there was about five or six, coming up seven deaths, like wow, within a short period. Like not traumatic deaths. People have really good lives and things like that. So it's like a reflective period. And then my dog had died. And then I got diagnosed. So I think mentally I was just like floating, Leading up to things. So it's just like doing everything to get by. And then I was in menopause at the time as well. So I think that's what I mean by finding my sense of self. I've been on a menopause journey since 33, which is long before cancer, because I had a hysterectomy at 32. So I think I can honestly say, I think from that period, my life's just been waves of so many different things. And then cancer just happened to jump on the wave that I was traveling on.
You've been through a lot in the last few years. And that's also shortly after COVID as well.
Yeah. So I think it's just, I suppose like it is for anybody, everything around that time, those few years ago, has just been compacted into a short, do you know what I mean? Like, but then it's just been so much content in a short period of time. And sometimes I feel like I need a ghostwriter. And then because I've had chemo and brain fog, a lot of things I actually don't remember.
Yeah.
And then I feel bad for not remembering things. And then I think, oh, do I not remember them because they weren't that important? Or do I not remember them just because I genuinely don't remember them? Or do I not want to remember them? Like, it's so confusing, like, being in my head sometimes.
I totally relate to that. And I think sometimes you forget things because they were traumatic and maybe they come back to you at a later point when you're ready to process them.
Yeah.
But also sometimes you just forget things because chemo, menopause, scatty brain, loads of breast cancer drugs has a big effect on us.
It does.
So you were diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. How did you get your diagnosis?
So strange. So I was 38 at the time. I went on like a holiday with my mum and my daughter. So before I went away, I went to have my, you know, your medical review. And when she was doing my checks and stuff, and then we were doing all my menopause things, and I'd started HRT as well, and I'd been on it for about 2 months. And when I went to have my medical review, everything was fine. And then she said that my right armpit was a bit more swollen than my left one. She didn't think nothing of it because we even had a little bit of, didn't really brush on breast cancer, but like we spoke about it because I did know people that had had cancer in the past. And because I haven't had no smears because I had my hysterectomy, she'd said, oh, you know, I'm going to send you to the breast clinic so you can get used to having mammograms. That's what she said. First mammogram came back as, well, had my first ultrasound actually. Then they'd found something. They thought that it was a fibroadenoma, yeah. Is it called?
Yeah.
And the team that were looking after me, they were fantastic because they'd said, oh, it looks like a fibroadenoma, you're 38, no history, you're perfect, everything's great. We're going to do a biopsy though, because I think they looked at my notes and they went, oh, you poor thing, you've been through all this stuff. And they said, oh, we'll do a biopsy and keep it on file. So if it grows, causes you pain, anything like that, because it was under 2 centimetres.
Mm.
And I think even when they called me back in to tell me, they were shocked that they found it to be breast cancer.
Yeah.
I think loads of women say, even though you don't think you're going to have it or you don't think someone's going to tell you, it's like I think you kind of know. You just know that they're going to tell you something.
Mm.
So I brought my god sister with me, my cousin, and she's had an experience and she was just absolutely fantastic. I think obviously you do hear that, I'm sorry you've got breast cancer. I was just like, the room goes weird, doesn't it? And then everyone's voice is dull and you can see mouths moving and you can feel a hand on your shoulder and it's just mist. Like bubbles, I call it bubbles. And I think what was fantastic is that I brought the right person with me to get my diagnosis, because then afterwards we came out and we'd sat in the car and then it was, right, Dave said, duh, duh, duh. Do you understand? Yeah, I do. Okay, so you know that we're going to have to do duh, duh, duh next. And I was like, okay. And she's just fantastic, and that was what I need. I can't thank her enough for that, for my cousin. And that was what I needed, the right person. And I think, I don't know, I feel like I had a little advantage of knowing that I went in there with an expert, but a personal expert. So I think I literally just went home and just told everybody, like, while I was making coffee, oh yeah, I've got breast cancer and da 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 da. But I think because of the ages of the children, don't know if that was the right or wrong way to do it, but I thought because I did it like that, I just thought if we can normalize it, and then obviously I'm up and down, so you can imagine having a hysterectomy at 32 and it pushes you into some kind of menopause, yeah. And then, you know, you're a single mum of two, I'm constantly raging, and then all that time before I was fighting to get HRT, so you can imagine how up and down I was, and really horrible to live with. It was very hard. And my eldest, she was at uni at the time. So I think I know that it would have been difficult for her mentally with having, you know, coming back and forth, not knowing what to expect either. But I think I literally just picked up every leaflet going in the cancer centre, brought it all home and just left it out. And just, you know, there's free reading for everybody. We're not that kind of family where it's like, oh, come on, guys, let's sit down and we're going to have a discussion about this in a family meeting. We don't do that, but we talk about it. So I think I was learning as much as them. So we all had a understanding, but I did feel like very confused. I didn't think that there was enough information out there for me to be able to explain it to them properly. I think because you're just buffering everything for them. Do you know what I mean? Like because you just feel like, oh my God, I've like ruined everything 4 years already. And then obviously, I think for me in the back of my head, it's them telling me about the gene and knowing that it can impact the children. And then I just think, why did I ask for them to tell me? Because what do I do with that information now? There isn't nothing I can do with that information, is there? So I just know that I'm genetically disposed. But we already know that because I had cancer, so...
Yeah, so this is the BRCA2 gene mutation, which gives you a higher chance of breast or ovarian cancer and has the implications on the rest of your family. What conversations have you had with your daughters about that? I know they're 14 and 22 now, aren't they?
So yeah, 15 and 22. My eldest one, obviously, you know, around the time I've given her all the information that's available, and then, you know, you can connect with the genetics team. And she's a big girl, so she... you know, finds her way and does that. And, you know, they know that they can ask. With my youngest one, she's just been a 15-year-old, so we're just leaving it there for her. When her time comes, she can look into it. I think it's a strange one with the gene because obviously, you know, like you said, you let the family know, but what's so funny about our family is there's so many females in our family. And like I said, my nan had passed away and she was 100. So wow. I've got all these aunties. You know, like, I've got 7 or 8 aunties. No one's had not even a blood milk duct or nothing. So it's just so interesting to then know that on my maternal side, from doing my genetic bloods, found that I had the BRCA2 gene. And... I think it's been difficult, but no one doesn't really talk about it. So it's kind of like, it's an annoying one for me with this gene stuff. So obviously when family members know that they have a gene, all of a sudden their scenario becomes more important than your cancer, because it's like, we need to mobilize because... You know,
then they're worried about them, you mean, rather than you.
Yeah. And which is good, because then also that's what I wanted you to do. I wanted you to take interest and, you know, don't just look at me and assume that nothing's going to happen to you. Like, you know, like, be proactive in your healthcare. And as a female, be proactive in your healthcare.
Before you were diagnosed, had you heard of triple negative breast cancer, which is what you're referring to as TNBC?
Yeah, no. When I got diagnosed, my team had said, oh, we can do your bloods, and then we do your bloods, they're genetic bloods, and that's when we find out about the genetic stuff. I said, oh, yeah, that's fine. Anything that's going, I'll have it. Had that done, they said it would take 12 weeks to come back. So waiting for that to come back. Got my leaflets and was reading the booklets. So I was like, I just want to know a bit more. So I started like Googling. And then like I'm reading and reading and I'm like, okay, breast cancer. And then it's talking about, oh, what type of breast cancer have you got? And then it's like, what do you mean? What type have I got? And then it's just like, oh my God, are you really telling me that it's an umbrella term? That is crazy. Like, why are they not telling us this? Like, I know it's a lot for the world to digest, but maybe it'll be a lot easier on women if we had an understanding that breast cancer is an umbrella term and that there are types of, because it's only when you are diagnosed and you're going through that horrible, painful, emotional journey of having to digest that information. Mm. It's bad enough to digest the word breast cancer. And then you're going to tell me what type of breast cancer it is. And then when you start to look into the types, for me, it was just horrible, because then it was like, so out of all of the types, why have I got that one? Like, why that one? Mm. You know, and then to try and find information about triple negative, it's not as much out there as it is for the HER positive, the HER ladies, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's stressful, because even now I still don't, even with all the advocacy and the things that I'm doing now, I still don't know a lot about triple negative breast cancer. I've connected with the TNBC charity, absolutely fantastic, and done some work with them. And I just hope over time that so much more research goes into it and things like that. And I think as well, I think the only time I got scared is when we were talking about the treatment options, because then when I initially thought, oh, breast cancer, and they told me, oh, go home, throw your HRT away. So I couldn't carry on with my HRT, which was a lot to deal with. So then I was reading up all the different things, and then I started to feel so positive, because I thought, oh, there's hormone therapies. Oh, I can have this injection. There's chemo tablets. There's this, that, and the other. And then there was like, oh, no, babe, you've got triple negative. And then it was like, oh, so what's in my arsenal? And then it was like, oh, well, you can have surgery, chemo. You could possibly have radiation, but we don't really want to give you radiation, because if your TNBC returns, we need something in your arsenal for the future. And like, luckily, my oncologist, because she has an interest in immunotherapy, I got immunotherapy. But I've met so many women that didn't qualify for it. And then I realised that I don't think I probably qualify. It's just because of who my oncologist was, is why I got an extra something in my in my arsenal. I had chemo and immunotherapy all the way through from the beginning, and then chemotherapy finished. I had my double mastectomy, but still continued immunotherapy for 18 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So triple negative, you've sort of described what it is, but essentially, as you said, it's often we talk about estrogen positive cancer, HER2 positive cancer, which means that estrogen is the thing that feeds the cancer. And triple negative means that it's negative of estrogen, negative the HER2 protein. So we can't target the things that feed it. There's no drug.
But then I think what's interesting about my case, what I used to ask my team was, because I've had a hysterectomy, obviously that slows down certain things in your body, speeds up your menopause, but slows down other things. And does that impact in a way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's something that's probably worth also exploring, because I have, like from talking to some women that I've come across that have had triple negative breast cancers, a lot of them have actually had gynae issues and things like that in their past, or growing up for teenage years. So I think that's quite interesting as well.
Yeah, definitely. I know that a lot of people I've spoken to with triple negative breast cancer have said it's really isolating, because there are fewer treatments available to you. We do sometimes use this word aggressive to describe it. And when you hear that your cancer is potentially particularly aggressive, that's just a horrible thing to hear, because you can't do anything about that.
But then it's all this post-cancer stuff that I just don't, I'm really, really struggling with this post-cancer life, because if cancer, if chemo and immunotherapy has stripped away half of my DNA, and I was well when you told me I had cancer, and I feel weird in this new body that I'm in now, and I have all these pains I never had before, how do I not know when I'm unwell?
Right, yeah. I totally hear that, because with me, I'm on so many different drugs now both to control the cancer and to control the side effects of the drugs that are controlling the cancer, that I have so many different aches, pains, symptoms, side effects and things, that how do you tell when something is new or something to worry about?
And then like how you were saying, you know when things have spread, if you have a backache and things like that, my back hurts all the time. Yeah. My back has not stopped hurting. So, but that, what does that mean? My arm is constantly aching.
But you've gone through menopause, and therefore, you know, a lot of these symptoms or feelings are very explained by, it can be explained by so many other things. Can I ask you, I know this has been talked about quite a lot, that Black women are more likely to be not taken seriously when we go to the doctor with a certain sign or symptom. Is that something you've experienced, and is that something that you worry about?
It's so weird. I experienced it with my gynae situation, but not with my breast cancer stuff. Yeah. And I think, I don't know whether it's just because of how, I can't even say it's how we present, because it's like your pain is not painful enough.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And then I think, I suppose because sometimes we might be a bit more direct. So, you know, we're not necessarily going in doctors crying and things like that. But sometimes you are going in the doctors crying, and then they will still minimize your pain. So now post cancer, I think my GP is scared of me. So my GP has openly said, I don't know nothing about immunotherapy. This is all new to me. So when you're talking to me about all these different things you're experiencing, I don't really know. I'm just going to send you back to oncology.
Yeah.
And so now it's, my pain isn't minimized. I'm just dismissed and I'm pushed from one place to another. So that is, I still think that's maybe part of the process. You know, there's so much things that need to change, but we are like dismissed. And the amount of women that I've met from this journey, I knew that it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad.
Mm.
Yeah, I didn't, because it's every department. So I thought initially, you know, maybe were overlooked in maternity or were overlooked in this area. But then it's every area where, do you know what I mean? Any type of women's health for Black women in general is just not the best.
And what do you think can be done or needs to be done to help tackle that?
People need to engage with communities more. Community needs education, but also there's a lot of mistrust. Services need to engage more. The community needs more money. The community needs money. If we can't get resources without money, we need allies, but we need allies to not necessarily always be inviting us out to come and talk and do these things. Allies need to come and meet us where we're at.
Yeah.
That would be really, really helpful.
Yeah.
When you build trust, then you can get the information. You know, when people trust you, then you will find out what is needed. You might find the things that you assume were needed may not be needed as much as certain other things, because you've had those conversations and you've opened that dialogue. Mm. Somebody needs to do that. And it's, we're getting there, but we're not getting there. It's very at a snail pace, you know. So, I don't know, it's one of them ones where even for me, I do the things that I do so that someone else doesn't have to.
How is your diagnosis received by your family and by your community?
It's hard to get a good reception on something that nobody doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose within our community, cancer just means death.
Yeah.
When I think about me as a Black woman hearing about someone that had cancer before I had cancer, it was, oh my God, so-and-so's not well. They're going to have chemo. That's going to, you know, you don't know what that is. So you think that it's going to take a lot out of them. And You don't, that's all you know. I think in the community, you just know cancer and chemo. And I think that what's so interesting, even now post-cancer, when I speak to like my elders and like people that are like mum's age group who have had breast cancer, when you ask them about their journey, they just say that they had breast cancer. They don't know. And then I'll say what type and they don't know.
Yeah.
So I think as well, maybe the terminology, it's not explained to people. And like one thing that I've noticed, and I say it to everybody, I do believe that when anybody is diagnosed with cancer, there should be onco-psych. I really believe that there needs to be an onco-psych team. Not necessarily a psychologist, I just mean a mental health. Like, you know, you could have a community mental health nurse there, just like how the team knows when they're going to get that patient in to give them that news, because they make sure that so-and-so is available after lunch and to be in the room, because you'll have not just the doctor in there, it's going to be you, whoever you bring. If you bring someone, you're going to have that extra nurse, and I call them the there nurse, and you've got the there nurse for you, for the tap on the shoulder to tell you everything's going to be all right and give you your leaflets before you leave. There needs to be someone there for your mental health as well.
Absolutely.
There really does need to be, because even if you do not engage with it at that time, at some point you will need it. Like for me now, I think that counselling therapy with cancer, it should come with my treatment. It should come with the treatment. You know that chemo and treatments are going to mess with people's heads physically. Mm-hmm. And that's not even going into the emotional side of having to digest what you're going through. So why isn't there somebody there to look after our heads? Like, why are patients paying for counselling? I don't understand that, because the first thing they'll tell us is this treatment's going to rock your head a little bit. So where's the person for when it rocks my my head? And you know it is, because you know what's in these medications. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much mistrust in the community, and then because there's so much stigma surrounding cancer, the treatments and things like that, a lot of people think that the treatments are a death sentence in itself, and they don't agree. Some people don't agree for you to have treatment. Some, you know, some people doesn't think it's a good idea. A lot of people believe in eating it away, praying it away. I think all these things go hand in hand with your oncologist, and if you have a good oncologist, they will probably tell you to embrace everything if it's going to help your state of mind.
Yeah. You mentioned that some of your elders or some people in your community will equate cancer immediately with death. What would you like to say to people now that you have had cancer? What would you like to say to change the attitude?
What does cancer look like? I think you can't say something to everybody as a whole. That would be wrong. It has to be like on a person by person basis, or community by community, case by case, isn't it, as we say. I think it's education. And I think like community leaders as well, because also, you know, like in churches, places where people are, those people aren't educated either. So each one needs to teach one, isn't it? So those people need to be educated so that they can put that out there to the community and then hopefully create the ricochet effect. And I think it's just people that are well-informed can make good decisions, can't they?
How have your Christian beliefs played into and interacted with your cancer diagnosis? Has it made you have more faith, and has it given you, has that helped you to get through it?
Yes and no. I think initially, like with all things, if you come from a Christian background, or if you come from a faith background, whenever there's anything, trouble or strife in life, you go back to what you know, isn't it? So there was like a heaviness in the beginning to be like God-focused and things like that. I did go to church a couple of times and stuff. I've slowed down on things like that now. But I think in the beginning, I think you do think to yourself, oh, maybe it's all the bad things I've done in my life and, you know, the times I haven't been nice, the times I haven't been my best, and the time, you know, is this my punishment for not doing this? And so you challenge your, you know, yourself and your faith a lot, and then you lean into it. But I think as well with faith, if you have strong faith, you're not supposed to have no doubts. So like a thing, like I'm from a Jamaican background, so like we'll, one thing that we like to say is, oh, we don't ask Christ. We don't ask him because he's got it covered for everything that we need. So if that's the attitude that's been, I've been brought up on and that's been instilled in me, I'm not supposed to have any fear with all of this. This is all part of the process, isn't it? Like, you know, you're supposed to have trials and tribulations, isn't it, to come out the other end stronger. But yeah, there was times that, you know, God for who he's worth, I didn't really like him because I just thought, well, like, why, you know, you do have your why me moments. And I just think, well, you know, I've already had my room whipped out. Like, you're going to take my boobs now. Like, what else do I need to give you for me to have grace or favour or a good life then, so to speak?
And do you still question whether cancer could have been your fault in any way? Like, is
no.
this, is okay, so you don't
no, not anymore, because I know what I need to know now.
Yeah.
I've made sure that, because I do think as well, for triple negative breast cancer, well, from my personal view on my triple negative breast cancer, is that I believe for me to have saved my own life at the moment, I felt like I needed to learn everything that I needed to know about my triple negative breast cancer, because I am my stats. If I sit there and read what the stats are, I'll just go to bed and just wait to die. And I think that's the hardest thing to explain to people around me and in my community. And that's also how I know that even some of the people that I probably love and care about the most, I know that if I pop quiz them, everybody's not going to pass. Nobody can empathize or sympathize with what you go through unless they understand what it is. And I'm not saying that they have to have a deep understanding. It's not your subject for you to learn. But if you had a generalized understanding, and I think this is where we're falling short with the generalized understanding about cancer, because then I've had people tell me, oh, I know someone that died of lung cancer, or I know someone that had prostate cancer, and, you know, you'll be fine. How?
Yeah.
I haven't had lung cancer or prostate. I ain't got a prostate, you know? So then it's just, I think in our community, we generalise the word cancer and nobody's fussed about where specific in the body it lands. It's just cancer and it's bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you might die from it eventually. Mm. You know, it's understanding the specifics of it as well and the impact. I think no one doesn't understand recurrence. There's been times, I think sometimes I'm so off the cuff, and there might be times where I could be moaning about something. I'd be like, oh, you know, you're like stressing me out, you're going to make my cancer return and things like that. And people get like, oh, you know, oh, pull yourself together, you're better now. And no, we have to be realistic, because if I phone you in 6 months and tell you, I'm sorry, my bloods have come back and my cancer's returned, what are you going to say to me? Like, people want to forget about it, but I keep it an active conversation. Because I don't think they understand about triple negative and recurrence.
Yeah.
So I am finding it very difficult. So at the moment, it's, let's just understand about cancer. When we understand about cancer, we'll move on to the nitty-gritties. And it sounds so bad, but that's just how I feel sometimes. And I find it mentally exhausting.
Yeah. I mean, that makes complete sense. And it also makes complete sense why the people around you don't understand, because there is so much to understand. First you've got cancer, then you've got breast cancer, then you've got triple negative breast cancer, then you've got immunotherapy, then they've got the specific type of immunotherapy that you're on. Then you've got chemotherapy, then the specific type that you're on. The specific reactions to those drugs, like there's so many things.
And then you've got to add the BRCA gene into it.
The BRCA gene as well, the gene mutation, and then your previous surgery and history, and you know all the ways that it affects you. Like, you, that's so much for you to learn. Mm-hmm. Mine has been so much for me to learn, to then try and get other people to understand it. Like, sometimes I will say something to a person close to me about something, and they'll be like, oh, well, I didn't know that. And I'm like, oh, this is a thing that is so in my brain that sometimes you assume that everyone else knows it, but they don't necessarily.
And then you feel really bad, because then also I suppose because it dominates your whole existence.
Yes.
And then sometimes you feel like a shitty person because you feel like there's nothing else to talk about.
Mm.
And then, like, even I've had people say to me that since you've had cancer, you act like a victim. Mm. But yeah, I am. I do. I am a victim. If you don't like it, go away. Like, I'm a victim and I am traumatized, you know? And just because I'm not screaming and crying every day and sitting down depressed, or because people see me going out and doing advocacy, I'm going out and doing advocacy because all you well people don't want to go and do it for us. It has to take for someone to get sick. And then I actually feel bad. I feel like a shitty patient because then I think to myself, it's took for you to get sick to mobilize and see how much women need support in this area. Like, as a woman, where were you? Mm. Like, I do sit there as a woman and think, well, where was I before? Like, as much as I'm out here now and doing all of this, I should have been utilising my voice a bit before. And I think it's then you have those little moments where it's just like, you don't want loads of fuss, but also sometimes it's like, is no one not going to acknowledge, like, how hard my body has worked to stay on this earth? Like, yeah. I've worked really hard. It doesn't look like it because you've only seen me just getting in the Uber to go to treatment. But that was loads. Like, for me, it was loads. Mm. And it's massive. I do strongly feel like a lot of people that know me will talk to me like I've just had a chest infection and I was put out for a few weeks, but I'm all right now. Isn't it? So, and that's why I keep saying, what does cancer look like? Like, stop looking at me and assuming that I'm all right, because I am very far from it, yeah. You know, and I'm not going to be better for a long time.
Well, I think that's why you said that you were going to keep the conversation going and that you don't stop talking about it. And I think that's both brave and it also makes sense, because you clearly still want to, you know, you're still in it, you're still experiencing it, and you still want to talk about it, but also explain it to people around you.
Yeah, and but I think that's why my healing journey has been difficult, because me talking about it, doing this is perfect for me. It's healing. With going into, like, family, friends, my own community or other spaces, because I'm having to teach someone how to understand me, that is not helping my healing, because my healing in my community at the moment consists of a lot of me having to explain and justify how I feel, how I act, what I say, what I don't say, what I mean, what I don't mean, whether I'm saying, you know, if I'm berating, if I'm not berating, do you know what I mean? Because also as well, my personality is different, and, you know, everything about me is different, and the world does have an expectation to see you go back to who you was, but who was I before? And then for me, it's different, because before cancer, I was going through my menopause, so I didn't know myself, so I didn't really have much sense of self, and then something else has happened to me and I've lost a bit more sense of self. So, you know, like, I think for me, I'm very proud of how how well I've done mentally, because I've been through a lot in a short period of time. And I think I've done really well. I think I have anyway.
I mean, what you think is super important, but also you're spending a lot of time and energy trying to explain things to other people, which is very important to you. But if that's frustrating you, then, you know, maybe there's also an element where you need to find people who already understand what you're going through.
Like, and that's talking the power of the community that you find with your allies. And that's what, we were talking about ambassador fatigue.
Connecting through breast cancer now with people in a similar community going through a similar diagnosis with triple negative breast cancer who can already understand what you're going through, so that you say these things and they're like, yep, you know, head nods is probably what you need at the moment rather than head shakes or confused looks of people that just require more and more and more from you.
And you can give each other space in those places. And, you know, I know that a lot of people will say to us survivors, you know, when you're at home behind closed doors, you're a struggle, but you guys can go out there and talk to people that you don't know and strangers and build all these rapports and networks, and because it's easier. You know what I mean? Because it's easier, because they're meeting me where I'm at. Like, no one hasn't even asked me how I feel about my body after cancer. Do you know what I mean? And things like that. After cancer, people will like joke about it and be like, oh, you know, you've got NHS PPL. It's like NHS free job. And it's nice to joke about it, but no one doesn't have to get in the shower every day and be me. And no one doesn't think about things like that, you know?
Yeah. And how do you feel about your body after surgery?
I don't know. I look at my body clinically. Yeah. If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah. So, clinically, absolutely fantastic. In terms of the surgery, brilliant surgeon, brilliant job. She's done fantastic. Obviously, director implant surgery, no nipples. She's done fantastic. How Tamara feels about it, I don't really know yet. I've looked at myself, but I don't look at myself long enough because I'll probably feel like I might cry.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the shower I get teary-eyed.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time when obviously there's nowhere else to look when you're having to wash yourself. So, I haven't got to that stage. I'm still trying to come to terms with the fact that I had triple negative breast cancer. I don't think my brain has got to the stage of the mastectomy. And I think also I feel like I'm being rushed by the world to get over it. I just not ready to get over anything yet, because I'm not there yet.
And talking about your reaction to your body clinically rather than, I guess, emotionally or physically or just you-wise, suggests that you are detached
completely.
Detached from it,
And it's so weird, because if talking about it clinically, I could just do that now and be like, right, this is what she did. Because obviously, you know, like we're a guinea pig all the time. Mm. So, you know, we're used to being a pincushion. So it's nothing to just, do you know what I mean? Like, we have no shame, do we, at this stage in life. So to get everything off, even if I had to do it now, it just wouldn't be a problem. But if you were to tell me to get it off in an emotional context, I'd probably ask everyone to come out of the room, ask for a towel, dressing gown. Do you know what I mean? And things like that. But clinically, I'll whip them out all day long and everywhere. I have literally no shame. I've been on a train and shown a woman and be like, look, I've had surgery. And they're like, oh, do you know? But to talk, for me to, I don't know how I feel about it.
You're not there yet. Yeah. So you said you're from a Jamaican background.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned previously that there are differences in knowledge and education in terms of cancer between Black African and Black Caribbean communities. What are those differences? Is there anything that you can kind of explain, and how can we improve education?
I think there's going to be like language barriers. And obviously, remember, Africa's a continent, you know what I mean, of many, many countries. So there's going to be different language barriers. There's going to be cultural barriers. And I do think culture versus religion as well, I think, can be a big thing. Elders are another big thing, and food.
Tell me about food.
So I think, like, in our cultures, obviously, we believe in, like, really good diets and things like that. So, and we do know anyway from research, you know, like, eating really well, having a good, you know, healthy lifestyle and things like that. But I think in the Black community, especially when people get diagnosed, you fall into the, you fall into that territory. Like, even for me, I just remember, like, people just randomly messaging me, like, recipes, and it'll be like, boil this, eat it with this, eat this on this day, on Tuesdays, drink that, do this, juice this, drink, boil that, then bathe here. Do you know what I mean? So then you get, like, really consumed, and then it's like, oh, eat all of this, and then I'm going to pray for you, and you'll be fine.
And is the idea about that, that do that instead of traditional medicine? You know, ignore what your oncologist says and do a natural
I think what I'm finding now, that there's more tech.
Yeah.
It's a bit more hand in hand, because people are starting to learn more. And I think they're learning more because it's becoming more common. So when something's somewhere, when you can't get away from it, the best thing for you to do is learn about what's going on. So I do think, especially because there's also a lot more younger people getting diagnosed, I do think now that conversations are opening up. But one thing I've noticed, there's a very big difference with religion, I think. So I've noticed that I live in a predominantly Muslim area, and when I speak to to Black Muslim women, a lot of their worries are to do with they believe that some of the treatments, medications, can make you infertile,
right,
and things like that. So there's a lot of stigma attached to drugs and things like that, and then also just the becoming a social pariah, from, you know, because people within the culture, they think that you can catch it. Some cultures think that you can catch cancer from being around somebody. So I think because there's so little education, I think people are getting better, but you have to drill it into, you've got to drill it into them for them to understand. With the Black community, I think, I don't know, we always feel like we're like the world's guinea pigs as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big stigma as well. Like, okay, you want to help us, but what for? You know what I mean? And nobody knows why. There's a lot of questions, and no one's not coming into the community. And I think as well, there's not enough Black faces in those positions. So then I think, you know, culturally, a lot of us do feel like, okay, we've got other people that aren't the same as us coming in, saying what our communities need and what your lot's data says. But how have you got the data if you don't talk to the people and we've not seen you in the room with us? And then you're saying from an outsider, third party observation, you know what a whole community needs or what you think they need based on data and not on people.
And of course, within that community, like, we can't just talk to all Black women in the UK, because as you say, it might be Black African so from diverse. One of however many countries, and then Black Caribbean from however many countries, and there's so many different religions and backgrounds within that. So everyone needs to be talked to in a totally different way,
and that's where I think education is the key. And I think, like, each one teach one, if the education's right from the beginning, the ricochet effect, make sure that the terminology is something that everyone can all understand, make sure that it's culturally sensitive, make sure that it's explained in the right way, you know. And then also it can't just be a leaflet. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It has to be a leaflet with a conversation, with a breakout group, with something else, and then something else and a cup of tea. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, and then build relationships, because then also there's so much everyone else can learn from us, and they do. I think it's starting to get better, because I suppose there's a lot more like younger voices like us that can amplify, and then also you need people to, you know, on the bridge to help explain. You know, I know that I can go to like my great auntie and someone older than me, or someone that's like my nan's age group, and I feel from my own experience I'm well informed that I can sit down and explain to them, because I've had my elders ask me, why did you take the chemo? And that's what they'll say, why did you take the chemo? Like it's a person and you bring it with you, you know. So, but then, you know, when I've explained to them, and then, you know, explaining how cancer starts before it's even specific to where it goes in your body, knowing that it's a form of cells and that they can develop over 10 years. Do you know what I mean? It's not just going to pop up next week. I think, like I said to you, a lot of my time is just having to break everything down to people, for them to have a bit more understanding, but then also signposting them to the right places to get further informed.
And that's why it's really important that you're here today with us talking. You know, hopefully lots of people will listen to this and will relate to some of the things that you've said.
Yeah.
You're also doing some work with Black Women Rising.
Yeah, I love them.
Tell us a bit about what they do and what you're doing with them.
I love them. They literally saved my life. So Black Women Rising is just everything to me. So I've been ambassadoring for them since I'd been diagnosed. So for me, while I was going through treatment, my main goal was to, if you get well, you'd be able to go to a Black Women Rising meetup. And then it all stemmed from there. So my goal through my treatment, especially when I was having those hard times, was you're going to get better and you're going to go to this thing. And I did. And I just fell in love with Leanne and like Sharon and the team, Charlotte, straight away, just everything to me. And like you said, you just feel seen and heard. And I did the Younger Women Together before, and that was great because it was all my age group, but not enough people like me that was there. And so finding them was just amazing. And anything that I can do for them, I'm always there to help, because I realise about like small grassroots charities and how hard they have to work. And then also, you know, like coming into this new world post-cancer and doing things like this, you realise that, you know, like I always assumed that there'd be like government contributions and things like that to cancer, because it's cancer and everybody can get it.
Yeah.
So then to find now working with some of the major charities and the smaller ones that it's not, it's people. And that's just been absolutely wild for me. Mm-hmm. So it's just opened like a whole new world, and I didn't think I'd fit, but it's a club that none of us want a membership to, but honestly, if you're thriving in it, it is the best membership. Like I would go through this 10,000 times over if it means that I end up in the spaces and in the communities that I have now, because I wouldn't have found them otherwise. And I think loads of people say it though, isn't it? Like it shouldn't have to be, but cancer, I feel like, was the making of the new version of me.
Yeah. I mean, you've really explained how difficult it's been talking with your loved ones about what you're going through and getting them to understand it. And so I can see how a group like Black Women Rising
could just change. Yeah, would
help you so much. What is the ambassadoring that you're doing with them?
So it's just obviously that we've spread general awareness, and then obviously we have like our groups and stuff. We did a hike and stuff this year at the beginning of the year, and I think we've got like our gala and things like that coming up later on in the year. And before I started today, I had message in like our newsletter with all like the things coming up. So obviously there's things coming up, but I haven't seen them yet. So I think it's just nice that there's always, if you want to do something, there's an opportunity to do something, which I think is amazing, because obviously it helps you in your healing if you want to. It helps the charity immensely, because any voice is a major voice. But I think, I think it's just, they're great. I think all of the charities are great, though. Yeah. I think it's just great how they hold space for us. Mm. You know what I mean? All of them. Yeah. And it's needed. And I feel like we're like a little army of like survivors. Mm. And I think what I love about Black Women Rising, it sounds really strange, but learning about other cancers has been really, really interesting. And just to see how other people have been impacted by other cancers, because I suppose when you have your specific cancer, you look for everybody in relation to what you're going through, yeah. which is absolutely perfect. And I definitely advocate that for everybody, because there's no point, do you know what I mean, sitting in a room of lung cancer survivors if you've got breast cancer. It's not going to be the same. There's only so far your conversations will be able to go. But what's good about Black Women Rising is because it's just for all Black women that experience any type of cancer, so the conversations that you get are so much more varied and diverse, and you know, like, you do learn a lot from a lot of the women.
It's a community,
honestly. 110%.
What would you say to other Black women who might be listening to this podcast who have just been diagnosed with breast cancer, and specifically if you have anything for triple negative breast cancer patients?
This is a shit time, and it will get better. If you want a friend, come and find us. And even if you don't want to make friends, still find us, because we have resources that can help you, you know. But come and find us.
Because, being Black Women Rising. Yeah,
Black Women Rising. Come and find us, because we're here.
Brilliant.
And I do always say, don't let nobody box you in the corner. Challenge. Ask if you know that you're a quiet person or you're more of a reserved individual, there's charities like us, Black Women Rising, but there's also From Me to You. They offer advocacy. You can get a buddy to go to the hospital with you. You know, if you want help, I'm a parent. If you want, I don't know how much I can help, but if you want help to break that down so that you can explain it to your children, we are there for that. We have to look after each other. So, that's what I'd say.
And to finish with the question we ask everyone on this podcast, what's the one thing you'd like people to take away from this episode?
The one thing I'd like people to take away is just understanding how complex cancer is. No one size fits all. Everyone's journey is completely different. Everybody is traumatized, even if we don't say. And for anybody that is diagnosed, surviving, has the best news, has the worst news, just be kind to yourself. You know, we've only got this one life, and let's try do good with it. And I mean, like, not necessarily good in the world. Sometimes doing good in the world is just being kind to yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic words there.
Thank
Mara,
you.
Mara, thank you so much for coming on the Breast Cancer Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This has been absolutely brilliant. And
thank
there's
you.
Just so much stuff that I think people will get out of this episode.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please also leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend it to someone you think would find it helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them. You can find support and information on our website, breastcancernow.org, and you can follow Breast Cancer Now on social media at Breast Cancer Now. All the links mentioned in this episode are listed in the show notes in your podcast app. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast.